Welcome back, Darksiders. Are you ready for another week of YouTubers gone wild? Of course you are. I knew you couldn't stay away. Tonight, we're diving into the case of Samantha Wolford. Or, as no one remembers her, simply Manic 6075. A small-town Texas girl with big city dreams and murderous tendencies. Her family of seven was drowning in debt, even with her husband working two jobs, and out of options, Samantha was forced to seek out employment. Unfortunately, she chose a career with low success rates and went into it with absolutely no research, preparation, or strategies. She became a YouTuber. Dun dun dun. Needless to say, things didn't go well. But don't worry. Once again, we consumed hours of deranged rants so you wouldn't have to. Now, get those snacks and vices ready, because we're descending into the darkness. Samantha was many things, but let's start with the basics. Born on August 28th of 1989, she was the oldest of three siblings and was raised by both parents. They lived in Mount Pleasant, but there isn't much else to say about the town. The population barely exceeds 17,000. It really is pretty tiny. As far as her childhood, it seems to have been fairly pleasant. There were no signs of abuse or neglect. Just another average family. Throughout these early years in high school, Samantha was generally described as a happy, friendly girl who dreamed of becoming an actress. She loved being on the internet, and much of her time was spent on MySpace and Facebook. Her life wouldn't really begin to change until her senior year, when she was 19. Not long after, she began dating her first boyfriend, a fellow senior. Samantha became pregnant with twins. They were born in 2008, and her first love proved to be only lust when she found herself raising the babies as a single mother. She had help from family, but she wasn't thrilled with her life. She had no money, no job, no husband, and she felt like she deserved the full package. Luckily for her, she would only be stuck in this slump for a couple of months before meeting Ernie Ibarra in a tattoo shop. Getting a tattoo was nothing new for Samantha. She had plenty of them already and would go on to get plenty more, but that wasn't the case for Ernie. In fact, it was very out of character for him. Before that night, he rarely concerned himself with anything outside of his gaming or computer interests. He was very intelligent, but also shy and reserved. It was a bad breakup that sent him spiraling into a depression and somewhat alt phase. For the first time in his life, he chose to walk into a tattoo parlor, and sadly, that choice would ultimately cost this man his life. That may be the most disturbing part of this whole case. Who among us hasn't gone out for a bit of soul-searching after a breakup? Can you imagine if your life depended on one of those nights?
I mean, fuck's sakes, I mean, I've...
Never mind, this isn't about me. Now, Samantha's first YouTube video was posted on November 15th of 2010, and all she did was read child abuse articles and complain about CPS for 11 minutes. It's horrible, and she wouldn't post again for an entire year. But if you want to see it for yourself, her channel is still available. She has just over 3,000 subscribers, but she had less than 100 before she became a murderer. Most of her views are in the toilet, though. There are a handful of lines that went viral when she first made the headlines. Don't worry, there'll be plenty more about her content. But first, we need to finish setting the scene. She and Ernie began dating, and he was a genuinely good man who cared for Samantha's daughters as if they were his own. I cannot express that enough through this video. He didn't make a whole lot working for a baseball and softball manufacturer, but it was enough to support their family of four. Just not a family of six. That's right. In 2011, they had another set of twins. Do you know what the odds of that are? For a woman to have two sets of twins back to back?
You know, honestly, I didn't either, but apparently it's like 1 in 700,000. Yeah, no kidding. Samantha always thought she was special. And in this instance, she was right. For someone who was already a statistical anomaly to actually become, you know, a murderer too, you know, well, that just doesn't happen every day. Especially not one that goes down the way that this one did. Whew. Anyway, that's when Ernie had to pick up a second job at Little Caesars while Samantha remained a stay-at-home mom and YouTuber. He didn't complain about it either. He was ecstatic to have those kids. They were his entire world. Every marriage has its issues, but for the most part, this one started off fairly happy. The stress of raising children can get extreme, sure, but when your biggest complaint about your partner is that he spends too much time playing video games, I mean, I'm sorry, but in my experience, that means you picked a winner. At least, that was Samantha's only problem with Ernie. I mean, he ended up having quite a few problems with her. It'd be one thing for her to be a stay-at-home mom if she were caring for the children. Cooking, cleaning. But the house was a wreck and the kids were being ignored while her husband drowned under the weight of two jobs. When Ernie finally broke down and asked her to look for work, her solution was to rekindle her dream of becoming a YouTube star. You may be thinking, no. I mean, surely she did something to help with the money, right? But yeah, you'd be wrong. No. In her videos, she only mentioned two other possible sources of income. And personally, I don't believe either one. First, there's being a piercer at her father's tattoo parlor, which, I can believe she may have done that at some point. I concede it's possible, but I would be absolutely shocked if she spent more than 8 hours a month there. Let alone a day. If her general personality and character aren't enough reason to feel that way, wait till you hear the next one. She was playing extras in different films. She even worked with Gerard Butler and Rooney Mara. No, I'm not kidding. That is literally what she claimed. Not as a joke, either, and not in a way that she could say that we misunderstood. She genuinely, seriously, got on camera and talked about filming these movies as if it was not a big deal. Just the most natural thing in the world. Honestly, this lie may be the one that confuses me the most. Out of all the lies she told, this is the one I keep coming back to. Usually lies have a purpose or originate in some kind of a truth, but I can't figure out where the hell this came from. It's like she was in some independent movie, you know, and decided to throw out a name that people would recognize. It's not like any viewers she gained would stick around without Googling for more information. The video was pre-recorded, so it had to be planned. I mean, what the hell was she thinking, you know? I know fake it till you make it's a real thing, but that only works if you're able to sustain the lies with actual talent. Oh, and while we're talking about her ridiculous lying, there's also a video where she claims her house burned down. It's hard to find adjectives that accurately describe her passionless plea for sympathy, but it's a hot mess. It's one thing to lie to the internet and expect to get away with it, but I don't understand what she expected her family to think. Oh well, we have lots of ground to cover. We should probably get back to it. Can we pretend that YouTube fantasy was actually like a feasible idea for a second? Because in order to succeed, she would have needed some form of skill. Not even necessarily the right equipment, since the standards were significantly lower in 2011, but whether it's singing, comedy, art, or just talking about an interesting topic, every YouTuber needs a shtick. You need to give the audience a reason to click, a reason to stay, and a reason to return. I'm telling you right now, Samantha gave them zilch of those things. While there are vloggers who make a living from simply talking about their lives and interests, they still have planned topics and script their dialogues to a certain extent. You won't find many famous ones who just switch on a camera and say whatever pops into their head. But that's what Samantha did. Most of her videos are under 10 minutes, and if she ever filmed an introduction explaining who she is and what she hoped to achieve, it's long gone. The second video was posted a year after the CPS rant, and it literally starts with, "Hey YouTubers, today a lot of shit pissed me off, so you guys get to listen to it." The fact that she thought anyone wanted to hear her complain would be funny if it weren't so, well, tragic. The 5-minute video is divided between complaints about her cousin's groom and almost hitting a deer on her way home from the wedding. It's hard to say which upset her more, but both were very clearly traumatic because she had to upload another video right after it to include all the things she forgot to say. Apparently, people were being very judgmental towards her cousin for choosing to get married so young, and Samantha was extremely offended by this. I know the prospect of watching friends and family shame a loved one on their wedding day sounds like something reasonable to be upset about, especially when you're only hearing me relay it to you in those words, but trust me, this was not that reasonable, and it's probably exaggerated like the rest of her content. I may not have any background in psychology, but I have an extensive background in crazy, and I can almost guarantee you this chick was fantasizing about all those haters watching her video and fearing her power. In reality, her friends and family felt violated by her constant need to air drama on YouTube. But it's painfully clear Samantha didn't give a damn. I have no idea how she fueled these delusions with no fans, but I can't fathom anyone outside of the people that she knew in real life who saw them. I mean, even those people were only watching to see the carnage. Life was hard, and they had to budget. But they were able to get by until 2013, when the couple had their 5th and final child. The extra costs would be their breaking point. And Ernie finally spoke to Samantha about helping with the bills. Remember how I said her only real complaint was the time Ernie spent gaming? Well, that was before she learned one of his avatars had married another woman. I guess I'm the only one nerdy enough to care which game it was because, like, nobody, you know, no one was really being specific. But yeah, like, that pissed Samantha off pretty good. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, avatars are the characters that represent us in video games, and sometimes those characters are able to pair with other people's characters. For reasons. Yeah, I don't think too much about that part. Now, most guys would probably end the virtual marriage, cut contact with the other woman, and call it a day. But Ernie decided to prove his love by really marrying Samantha. However, I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear this didn't fix their problems. He kept right on gaming while she kept right on pissing him off with YouTube and letting the house go to hell. One of her more shocking videos takes place while she's pregnant with the 2nd set of twins. It begins with her saying she failed to keep up with her pregnancy vlog and looks exactly like all of her other posts. And that's why it's so jarring when she suddenly brings her cigarette into frame and takes a huge puff. Now let's ignore how ridiculously easy it would have been to smoke before or after she filmed. I mean, that would ruin the fun. Instead, let's talk about how she justified her actions. Don't worry, she wasn't doing anything wrong. She had a doctor's permission. You see, Samantha doesn't have any vices like most people, and she simply has too much stress in her life to just quit cold turkey. That would actually be worse for the baby's health, since she could go into premature labor. She has no choice but to smoke a few times a day. Yeah. I hope you can hear all the sarcasm oozing from my voice. It's probably worth noting that the other children weren't much safer in her care. There's also footage of her daughter dancing in the passenger seat while Samantha is driving at significant speed through what appears to be a residential area. Oh, and while I'm pointing out the insanely narcissistic hypocritical ranting, there's one more thing I want to share. So nothing pisses Samantha off more than stupidity. And while we could spend a few minutes on the irony of this alone, I want to focus on what she believes society should do with the stupid people. She's absolutely horrible at articulating her thoughts, but she essentially has 2 ways of going about this. A vaccine or colony. Which, yes, it's exactly what they sound like. Cure them with a vaccine or separate them into their own colony. Away from the rest of us. I truly cannot fathom how she thought her videos were going to make her famous. It's a level of delusion beyond my comprehension. So, this is where things really start to get ugly. The couple was miserable with each other, and things were getting worse with each passing day until Ernie finally had enough. He couldn't take coming home to a disgusting house and neglected children after 14-hour shifts anymore. so he moved out. If only he had stayed out, we wouldn't be sitting here and talking about him. Ultimately, Samantha would drag him back into her web, and she did nothing to change her ways. The next time Ernie had enough, he wanted a divorce, and he planned to take the kids with him. But Samantha was never going to allow that to happen. She went straight for the crazy bitch playbook and began accusing Ernie of abuse. She said it to her friends, family, her channel. His family and those closest to him knew they were lies, but what could they do about it? I mean, obviously, Ernie was really hurt and concerned by this, but equally as helpless. This guy didn't have a violent bone in his body. In the early morning hours of February 20th, 2015, Samantha's aunt called 911 to report a home invasion and kidnapping. She told the operator that three men broke into her niece's home, tied her up, and beat her husband before dragging him out of the house. Police arrived at 2:19 a.m., and Samantha walked them through the scene. The body cam footage and interrogation are on YouTube as well if you want to see how bad of an actress she actually is. But for now, let me give you the rundown on her version of the events. But remember, even before she opens her mouth, she's starting off at a disadvantage. When something like this happens, spouses are already the first suspect. But when you have such an unusual situation, like a kidnapping with a male victim, the cops are going to start off doubly suspicious. They just are. Three men dressed in black supposedly broke into Samantha and Ernie's house while they slept. The couple was dragged from bed and moved downstairs, where Ernie was forced to look at his wife while being taunted and pistol-whipped by the assailants, until, eventually, Samantha was returned upstairs to be tied and gagged. The men then took her car keys and fled the scene with Ernie. While tied up, Samantha managed to reach her phone, to which she then used her face to call her mother. When asked why she could call her mother instead of 911, she immediately clarifies that she pressed the call button enough times to call the last person she spoke with, which happened to be her mother. Now, I don't know if she planned that excuse ahead of time or if it just caught her off guard, but it's the only thing she got right, so I'll give her that much credit. Most people gloss over where she explains this part, but I honestly do try to be as accurate as possible. While it's only my opinion, I think she wanted to call her mom first for two reasons. One, she was scared and wanted her mother there, but even more importantly, it delayed the beginning of her performance. 911 calls are recorded, and any minor slip of character would be perfectly preserved for a jury of her peers. This brings us back to where we started, with the 911 call. Her mother, Rosie, had actually been at a club while her daughter, Natasha, were standing outside, speaking with the club's owner when they received Samantha's call. The poor woman describes it as the most terrifying moment of her life. Her oldest daughter hysterically screaming into the phone, but her words unintelligible. Rosie had no idea what had happened, only that it was something horrible. When she was finally able to make out the details, she called her sister in a panic, and everyone made their way to Samantha's home, where her aunt would finally make the 911 call. Now, we can talk about what the police found when walking through the crime scene. Didn't take long for them to grow suspicious of Samantha. In fact, it was her own mother who pointed out the unusual situation of the children's sleeping arrangement. Normally, they slept spread out in their own rooms. But this night, all five were sound asleep in the back bedroom, having never woken during the attack. There was also a surprising lack of blood for a scene where a victim was pistol-whipped, and nothing was stolen. Through questioning Samantha, they learn the assailants are in possession of Ernie's phone, and the officer immediately calls in the lead on his radio, excited by the news. He only needs the phone's number. But Samantha is frozen like a deer in the headlights, wide-eyed and stammering. The officer stands by, anxiously waiting to pass it along, hand still on his radio. And Samantha can only say she doesn't remember it. Noticing her phone clutched in her hands, the officer then asked if Ernie's number was saved to her contacts list. And of course it was. After reluctantly sharing the information and learning the phone can be used to track her husband's location, Samantha asks to call her mother, who had previously left with the children. Obviously, she was allowed to do so, but what detectives wouldn't learn until later is that she texted someone else first. Someone she warned to, quote, kill phone, shut that shit down. When asked for the names of anyone who may be responsible, she initially plays dumb. But once pressed, she paints Ernie's father as a drug lord who recently pissed off a rival gang. At one point, she took it so far as to say Ernie was involved with the family business, but had quit. Which, of course, was a reason to say Ernie's father had also been upset with him. But it's okay. These cops weren't stupid. With Samantha looking more suspicious by the minute, they take her to the police station for a formal interrogation, and the case against her only grows stronger from there. She tried to maintain her original story, but the details began to change one by one as each lie was exposed. One interesting, if disgusting, change is how often she found ways to compliment herself while describing Ernie's beating. What starts off as simply being forced to look at him soon includes new dialogue from the assailants. They repeatedly yelled things like, "Look at her! You see how pretty she is? How could you treat her like that?" In all the crimes I've researched, I've never seen someone with such an absolute lack of shame. There are no depths to which this bitch will not sink. The detective kept pushing, insisting she knew who did it. Until finally, she cracked. She wasn't ready to accept she'd been caught, but she was ready to throw her accomplices under the proverbial bus. She says the only thing she might know, but she isn't sure about. Then, after begging to remain anonymous lest she be the next to disappear, she proceeds to spill the beans about a mysterious man called John Rebel. Well, that's his name on Facebook anyway. She tried to keep his real name secret just a little while longer. You see, earlier that day, Samantha had visited a friend in the hospital who had just given birth. And while there, she met the friend's boyfriend, John. During the course of her visit, she spoke of being abused by her husband, an offense the rebel man took quite seriously. Though she thought he was joking at the time, his offer to, quote, handle the situation suddenly seemed much more genuine. Don't worry, the detective wasn't buying a word of this garbage either. While Samantha's mouth kept digging her hole, police were looking into John. Didn't take long to learn the mystery man from the hospital was actually Jonathan Sanford. One of the many things they discovered when looking into this man was CCTV footage that proved he was a little closer to the victim's wife than Samantha would have led them to believe. For one thing, he was seen taking her children to school and Walmart. Whether they had any form of sexual relationship, I can't confirm one way or another. But if I were forced to guess, I mean, yeah, I'd assume they were banging. Again, that's just me, but I mean, I don't know. You tell me, do you guys make a habit of taking random women's children around? School? Walmart? Grocery shopping? Yeah. Either way, the most important thing you need to know about John is that until very recently, he'd been in prison for assaulting his cousin. This was enough to bring him in for questioning, and two more were close behind. As it turns out, his brother-in-law, Jose Ponce, and Octavius Rimes were the other men involved. Even after all three were arrested, Samantha maintained her innocence, insisting she never dreamed Jonathan's threats could have been valid. This is when the detectives would receive warrants for all four suspects' phones, and they found much more than the messages that I told you about earlier. In fact, that text wasn't the only warning she sent to Octavius. Shortly after the first message, she overheard chatter on the radio stating that the phone's last known location, which prompted another warning, quote, ditch phone, move. There was nothing left to hide. That doesn't mean that Samantha finally confessed. No, we'll likely never get that pleasure. But when confronted with the evidence, her story changed yet again. Now, her excuse relied on her use of Ambien the night before. For those who don't know, Ambien is a powerful sleeping pill, one that can only be purchased with a prescription. If you take it and stay awake, it can have serious side effects, and cause hallucinations. Some people take it specifically to get high. It genuinely can mess you up if not taken responsibly. I mean, that is completely true, but to say it was the reason she helped her husband's murderers evade law enforcement? No, that was never gonna fly. It's not even like they texted her and she responded. She had enough foresight to lie about calling her mother, and then she blatantly warned the killers to move when hearing that the police had found their location. Period. Luckily for the police, they wouldn't need to play Samantha's game much longer because Jonathan decided to confess. He told detectives everything. One night, Samantha told Jonathan and his girlfriend that Ernie regularly abused her and the children. She must have spun quite the tale, because it doesn't sound like it took very long for John to offer his assistance. I feel like most people would offer a place to stay or help moving out or... I don't know. I'm just really confused as to what she could have possibly said in order to get that reaction. I mean, to be fair, murder wasn't the first solution he suggested. The first was to plant felony amounts of meth in Ernie's truck and then call in an anonymous tip to the police, but you'll never guess why that didn't work. It wasn't because they couldn't get the meth. That was the easy part. Samantha actually went with them to make the purchase. Of course, she didn't have a babysitter, so all five children had to go along for the ride, but hey, no worries. Anything to get them away from that abusive bastard, right? Fuck. Now let me paint the scene for you. We got Jonathan, Jose, Octavius, and Samantha all sitting around with this sack of meth and talking about how Ernie was finally gonna get what's coming to him. They would wait for him to come home from work, hide it in his truck, and then call the police. But once they actually had the drugs right there in front of him, the plan didn't sound so solid anymore. None of them were thrilled at the prospect of involving police. So, and probably after sampling a little bit of the product, they decided, what the fuck, let's just kill him. Considering this plan would actually involve a much heavier police presence, I mean, I can't be the only one who thinks these guys just wanted to, like, keep the meth for themselves, right? I mean, I'm sure it didn't help to have Samantha constantly reassuring them that she was an actress. Guys, I'm not even kidding. Like, she told them not to worry about the police. She could handle them because she's an actress. You know, I thought I lived in a fantasy world, you know, but, holy shit. Okay, so, you're probably thinking this can't get any worse, right? I mean, we're discussing a woman who took her children to a drug deal while planning to kill the only father they've ever known. I mean, after all, but, yeah, no, it totally does. It gets worse. Did you think it was odd all five children managed to sleep through the home invasion and a kidnapping? Well, that's because they had a little help from Mommy's Ambien. That's right. This woman drugged her children. Once they were passed out, she tucked them away in the room farthest from her own. Another nail in her coffin was how three men entered the home. During the initial planning phase, in a brief moment of hesitation, Jonathan had told Samantha all she had to do was leave the door unlocked if she wanted their help. And that's exactly what she did. That night, those three men walked into that house with absolutely no resistance. And the most heartbreaking part of it all, aside from the five children who were essentially left orphans, were some of Ernie's last words. This man was ripped from his bed by three strangers in the middle of the night. His fear and his confusion are incomprehensible. We'll never be able to fully fathom the terror that he experienced as he was beaten in front of his wife, knowing only a few thin walls separated them from his children. He could have only expected the worst as he watched another man pin his wife to the ground, and he begged them not to hurt her. Even after they put him in the car and drove away, she remained his priority. The man who already wanted a divorce still couldn't bear the thought of something happening to the mother of his children. You know, it's a real fucking shame that his feelings weren't mutual. So, they drove to a remote forest in the next county and walked deep into the woods where Jose shot Ernie. The original plan was for Octavius to cut his throat, but for whatever reason, that seemed to be taking too long, so Jose just did the job himself. Once the body was recovered, Jonathan and Jose pled guilty to aggravated kidnapping and first-degree murder, each receiving a 50-year sentence in April of 2016. Octavius went to trial that December, and although he did not plead guilty, he received a combined sentence of 98 years for both crimes. Samantha didn't go to trial until September of 2017. And she maintained her innocence by continuing to blame the medication for her actions. You'll be pleased to hear that the jury wasn't buying any of that. And after an exceptionally short deliberation, she was found blissfully guilty. She received 50 years for the kidnapping alone. And a second trial for Ernie's murder would earn her an additional 99 years. Needless to say, she's going to be in prison for the rest of her natural life. Even if she were somehow able to get paroled on the kidnapping charge, only then would the murder sentence begin. There's no way out for her. And honestly, that's exactly how it should be. Oh, hey, it's almost like she got sent off to live on her own colony after all. Oh man, I love when these things come full circle. I bet you probably think this is the end of her story, that she's sitting in a cell rotting somewhere in silent shame. But you'd be wrong. And not just because she's incapable of shame. Tell me, have you ever heard of jailbabes.com? It's a site for female inmates to communicate with the outside world. Kind of like a Tinder for convicts. I took the liberty of checking out her profile, and it doesn't seem like prison had any effect on her personality. You know what? Here, let me give you a little taste. There's never a dull moment with me. I'm a caffeine-addicted Mormon who just loves to laugh and enjoy life to the fullest. I love to meet new people. It's always quite interesting getting to know people from all walks of life, so never think we'll be ill-matched. I'm not judgmental. I have a passion for anime, manga, cosplay. Ooh, wait, hold on. You know, I got, look, it got too ridiculous. Let me skip the list of her likes and tell you how it ends, because this is too much. All right, are you ready?
I work hard so I can play harder. Write me so we can play together. You won't be disappointed.
Oh my God, I can't believe I said that with a straight face. Anywho, she can't actually talk online or reply to the emails, but if you include your home address, she can respond by letter. Though something tells me she only responds to those who utilize the donate button, so I don't know. Just maybe be aware of that. I'm not encouraging you to interact with her. In fact, I really hope you don't, but, you know, hey, I'm not your fucking mom either. Well, guys, if you only take away one thing from this, make it that Ernie Ibarra was a good man and father who deserves to be remembered as such, for his sake and for his kids. Meeting Samantha Wolford was the single worst mistake of his life, and it's honestly heartbreaking that that mistake happened to be fatal. Right down to his last breath, the man was still trying to protect his wife and kids. So, well, as much as I hate to bring us out of our cozy darkness, I'm afraid that's it for tonight. Don't worry, you'll get your next fix soon enough. And by the way, Darksiders, don't do anything I wouldn't do, huh?